Caroline, Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where buzz is always about great service. A lot of news in the NFL. It is officially draft month. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and Ensworth head coach, joins us now. Tim, appreciate you for being flexible with our schedule this week, joining us a little bit later this week for the big news of the week. Stephon Diggs traded from Buffalo to Houston. Now, I cannot quite make sense of why Houston just got rid of the final 3 years of the contract. Trading a second round pick for just 1 year of Stephon Diggs and $22.5 million feels awfully rich. Yeah, help me make sense of this, Tim. What did you make of the Texans' decision to do that with the contract?
Yeah, I agree with you. I was surprised by it. It didn't seem like it necessarily made a ton of sense. And from a, well, why wouldn't you just keep it there? You know, have him under contract. This is probably, you know, not a 1 year expectation for you in terms of what you think your window is. You do have a second year quarterback. Obviously, you think he's really good. Like, I guess when I look at the moves in general by Houston, it feels to me like, okay, yeah, we have the young quarterback who's inexpensive. Let's surround him with as much talent as we can right now, because that's how teams try to make it to the Super Bowl and hopefully win it. So, you know, I think maybe that's what was necessary, you know, in order to get Stephon Diggs and have Stephon Diggs be happy once he's in your building. Because I think that, you know, he's probably had a history of not necessarily being the best employee when he was unhappy about something. So, look, that's my guess in terms of why the contract situation has worked itself out the way that it has. I still think it's probably good for Houston. Maybe they, you know, are, you know, in the process of reworking something else, or saying like, hey, you know, we'll have the opportunity if you catch 110 balls, we have the opportunity while you're here for us to renegotiate something with you. So, yeah, I think it's, and I would say that from this perspective of like the winners in this, but I think Houston's a winner in it because they're adding a really good player with a young quarterback who, you know, had a good year with probably receivers not as good as Stephon Diggs. And then Stephon Diggs is the winner. I mean, he's the winner because he gets to go play with a really good young quarterback. And if it isn't great, look, he's still going to be a valuable, you know, wide receiver on the market.
We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck. And yeah, the move itself, adding Stephon Diggs, I think that's a slam dunk for Houston. It's just, you know, kind of the contract thing I've had questions about, but just with the addition of Stephon Diggs in Houston, where do you put the Texans in the hierarchy of the AFC?
Well, they got better, right? So they were, you know, they weren't Kansas City. They haven't been Baltimore. They're chasing those teams. I don't think adding Stephon Diggs necessarily means that, you know, they're right there with them now, but I think it gets them closer for sure, because when you look at Houston and you look at them last year, where what with the young receivers that played well, and look, maybe Tank Dell is better than we thought that he was coming into the season. He had a great year, but when you like, I don't know how you could look at the addition of Stephon Diggs and not think that is a true proven number one wide receiver, guy that could catch double digit touchdowns, guy that could catch over 100 balls. And so with that being the case, yeah, it gets them a step closer for sure to the Kansas City Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the Ensworth Tigers. I thought the Diggs trade was a trade, and I've told Caroline this, Tim, that I think it was because this was something that no one saw coming. And it just seemed like it was just out of the blue. You wake up, you know, go throughout your day, and then, oh, my goodness, Stephon Diggs has been traded. I think a part of this has to do with Tank Dell. Because their offense, when they had Tank Dell and Nico Collins, obviously in a tight end, this was a flourishing offense. Then you lose one of those weapons and you can't play the way that you normally play, especially going up against a Baltimore Ravens team, the way you want to play as far as throwing the football, because you're one, you know, one target down or one playmaker down. You don't know how he's going to come back off of the broken fibula. And if he does, how long will it take? Well, we don't have time to wait. We got our quarterback. Mm-hmm. We need another playmaker. And we don't need him for a long term. We just need him for a short term. I believe that's the reason why they went out and got a Stephon Diggs, because some of it is predicated on whether Tank Dell comes back the way he left last season.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, it's true. It's fair. And when you consider how good he was and the severity of the injury, it makes sense that you'd want to protect yourself. And I think you see that all the time. I think the teams that get themselves into trouble are the teams that don't protect themselves. And they say, oh yeah, I mean, like, he'll be good. He'll be back. And you see him, you're like, yeah, you know what? Like, coming off a big injury, you know, he's getting limited reps in training camp, and you know what, the leg blew up again, and now he's going to be out for a few weeks. And so, yeah, I don't think there's any question that you look at it and you say, okay, well, like, how do we protect ourselves a little bit? Think about the Baltimore Ravens last year. Mm-hmm. Look, Odell Beckham Jr., like, what was his true role, you know, on that football team? Like, was he brought in to be some type of true, you know, every down player, every week player? Not really, but they knew between the injuries they had with guys like Bateman in the past and the fact that Zay Flowers was not truly a proven commodity as a rookie, it was like, listen, you better have some guys there that you're going to be able to turn to when a guy hits a rookie wall or a guy gets injured. And so, yeah, I think it's kind of a mark of a good team to say, yeah, look, we're going to address this as well, even though it's not necessarily a need, assuming everyone's healthy.
Now, why do you believe J.J. McCarthy supposedly is rising in the stock, but it seems like Drake May is slipping a little bit? Why do you think that is? Because when you come on with us, you've called Drake May games and mm-hmm. you think highly of Drake May as a quarterback, but it's like some people don't think that highly of him. And now you see a J.J. McCarthy sort of slipping in that spot that before then was reserved for Drake May.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great question. Look, I think everybody is going to, you know, evaluate quarterbacks and have a certain opinion about guys. Like, I'll use this example because it's a Michigan State guy. Look, I loved Kirk Cousins coming out of college. I thought he was awesome because I watched him play games at Michigan State in cold, nasty weather, and still pass the ball really well. Like, we had joked before about the talent around him at receiver when he was there. Like, I loved Kirk Cousins. Well, like, think about it. Washington got beat up because they took him in the fourth round after they had taken RG3 with the second overall pick. Like, not everyone's going to see quarterbacks the same way. Like, remember, Josh Allen's the best quarterback in his class. I mean, he wasn't the first one taken. You know, like, that happens. Patrick Mahomes, best quarterback in his class. He wasn't the first one taken in his class. And so, like, why is it like that? Look, people are going to see different things. People are going to, you know, maybe value certain traits more than others. I would just say this, and I've said this, like, and I'm not, like, waiting for someone else to say something to copy what they say. I think he's as good of a prospect as I've evaluated. Like that's how I feel about Drake May. I think he checks every single box about as well as you can in terms of playing that position. Now, is McCarthy a good prospect? Yeah, of course he is. Like, look, if you're a battle-tested guy, which he was at Michigan, had to fight for that job and win that job at a program like that, like, there's something to you, you know, if it wasn't just a handed-to-you scenario and you had to fight for it. I actually think he's an excellent runner with the football. I think he's a good competitive guy that's played big in big moments. That's a big deal. Just for perspective, he's got, like, I don't know, I think he's got, like, under 600, you know, attempts in his career in college. By contrast, you look at some other guys, they got, like, 1,500 attempts. I think there's a big unknown about what he is as a passer, even though he's played a good amount of college football because of the offense at Michigan.
Yeah, and that's what
– oh, sorry, D-Maze, go ahead.
No. I was going to say that's what Caroline and I were talking about in regards to JJ McCarthy. Like, all of a sudden, he comes out of, it's not like he comes out of nowhere, but I think from what I've seen on television and on film and watching Michigan a lot, he's a good quarterback. But to go from where he was before, draft talk or right after the national championship to where he's at now, I mean, goodness gracious, they must have saw some things on tape that they really love them. Because the way they're approaching it, it's like teams are, sort of trying to jockey to move up to get JJ McCarthy.
Yeah, and listen, it all might be fake. It all might be like, oh my gosh, Drake May's amazing. Let's make sure everyone knows that. Like, yeah, he's got this long delivery. We don't like that. Oh, like, yeah, we're not. He's kind of stiff. His interview was, yeah, it was just okay. Like it might be that too. Like, I'm like Daniel Jones got drafted really hot. Shocked me. I thought he was just okay. Like, I did not think that he should have been drafted in the first round. I did not think he was great. I think I've told you guys this before. Yeah, I talked to a guy that I, feel like I'm close with. And he basically was like, Daniel Jones, we had a conversation about him. I'm like, there's no shot the Giants are taking Daniel Jones. Like, there is no way that it's happening. And they move up and take him. And I was like, hold on a second, man. Like, you hurt my feelings. Like, I thought we were boys. You're telling me how much, like, you agree with my take on Daniel Jones. And next thing you know, you all move up and get him. Like, so I think it's that time too. So, look, I'm not saying I know what the rumor is or what anybody else is doing. I don't think that there's any possible way. As much time as I spent around Drake May, as much football as I've watched him play, what I think his growth potential is at the position and all that stuff, there's no shot that I'm the only guy that thinks he's the best quarterback in this class. There's no way. Like, it's just, I don't see how that could be possible based on how, I mean, how good I think of a prospect he is.
Talking with ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck, will a team like a Minnesota or a Denver or the Raiders or the Saints, a quarterback needy team, would they trade up? Would they talk themselves into trading up to either 4 with Arizona or 5 with the Chargers or even 7 with the Titans to take JJ McCarthy?
Yeah, I mean, I forget. I think Mike Tannenbaum put together a scenario where Arizona moved Kyler Murray to Minnesota and took J.J. McCarthy. And, okay, Minnesota needs a quarterback, I mean, like, that is – I don't think there's any shot they're going into the season with their current roster. And I think it's important when you lose a good player or that you replace them with a good player. They lost a really good player. So, and, and on the Kyler Murray front, I think Kyler, had a pretty good year coming off of an injury. So, and Kyler's contract in a few years is going to look like a bargain if he's playing at a starter level because of what's happening with these other quarterback contracts. So, yeah, I do think that there will be some type of movement. I think a team like Minnesota, certainly a team that has some ammunition in terms of draft capital, definitely could be in the mix for something like that.
Tim, go ahead, Dimas.
Quickly, I want to ask you, Kansas City. Obviously, we know what's going on with Rashee Rice, and it seems like more stuff is coming out. And the way I look at it, I don't see how he gets away without not being suspended. So, if I assume he's going to be suspended for a considerable amount of time, what does the Kansas City Chiefs do in regards to the draft? Because now they're taking their best pass catcher outside of Travis Kelce. He may not be available for them some portion of the season.
Yeah, I think the thing that's really hard for the Chiefs, I mean, obviously, it's just a bad situation in terms of just, grown-up responsibility here. But, like, from a standpoint of if you look at Kansas City's receiving corps, the only one that really showed progress and improvement throughout the year really was Rashee Rice. And they definitely started relying on him more and more. Was he perfect? No, but he was really the only ascending player. You go back to, obviously they've made moves on this, but like Marquez Valdes-Scantling, he had a bad year. He had a really bad year. Now, he made one really big catch in the postseason, but he wasn't an ascending player in terms of improving in their system throughout the year. Obviously, Kadarius Toney didn't do that. So, like, Sky Moore, has not come along the way that they wanted him to. Rashee Rice is the only guy that has. And now, to your point, now you're not going to have him, most likely, and for at least for some period of time. So with that being the case, like, yeah, I think you now are in the mix of, like, where are you drafting a wide receiver? How soon, especially with it being, and how often, with it being a receiver class that I think most people think is really good? And I would agree with that. Look, Zay Flowers is a good player, when was the first, first couple of receivers taken last year. Like, that would not be the case in this class. Like, I think in this class, there's, there are probably four, five, six receivers that maybe would go before Zay Flowers would have gone. And, if we look back at last year's class.
Talking with Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, it's kind of become a running joke on the show that every single mock draft that comes out, and it doesn't matter where it comes from, whether it's The Athletic or your colleagues at ESPN or NFL Network, every single one has the Titans taking Joe Alt at 7. It's almost more newsworthy when there's a mock draft that doesn't have the Titans taking Joe Alt at 7. Is he the tackle prospect that everyone makes him out to be, that he is pro ready, that he is plug and play and has the potential to be your left tackle for the next 10 to 15 years?
Yeah, I would say this, and this is from experience calling a few Notre Dame games over the last few years, whether it was the Eichenberg guy, just guys that come out of that program. Look, there are certain places where, it feels like five-star after five-star, big, tall, long, athletic, recruited by everybody because it's Notre Dame. They recruit the country. They have a history of getting good offensive linemen. They play against good competition week in and week out. And so you get to see it. And I remember talking to Brian Kelly about it because they had a bunch of injuries one year. And he looked at me and he's like, honestly, it's not that big of a deal when we've got another one right behind him. And so, look, have there been guys that have come out of there and not been as good as, people expected them to be? Sure. I think there are a lot of guys that have come out of that program playing on the offensive line that there's just been so many data points from the time that they were in high school through what they did in college that you have fairly good authority that, they should be able to compete at a high level, and it makes sense for a team that's got a needed offensive line, has filled some needs at receiver and needs in defensive back, that it kind of feels like, yeah, this is scripted to take an offensive lineman.
And as far as the offensive line is concerned, because it really, the more that we talk about it, the more and more I feel like the Titans have to go offensive line early in the draft. But whenever we talk about a lot of the tackles in this draft, whether it's Alt or Olafashinu or J.C. Latham, there's varying opinions on how close those tackles are in talent, how closely they might be evaluated. What do you believe is the drop-off between Alt and some of these other first-round graded tackles?
Yeah, here's what I say, and this is just like, for what I do. Look, I look at the quarterbacks and evaluate the quarterbacks. And the process of me looking at the quarterbacks, I end up seeing receivers, right? Like, that's something that, like, whether it was when I was looking at Trevor Lawrence and I was looking at that, and like, you see the receivers that he plays with. Similar thing with Michael Penix and Roma Dunze. Like you see that.
Yeah.
I'm not a tackle expert. I'm not a defensive line expert. Now, I will say, like, there are times you recognize certain things. I remember watching Blake Bortles, and in the process of watching Blake Bortles, like, Jadeveon Clowney was impossible not to realize, like, what was going on and the impact that he was having. So, like, I don't know the difference, and I don't pretend to know the difference, in regards to that. And I think that ultimately, when you look at a need and then you think of what you want, I think on all the prospects in my experience with offensive linemen is, okay, what is the ceiling and what is the floor? And the reason I say that is this. Everyone wants to say, like, oh, hey, this is the next Jonathan Ogden. Well, guess what? They're not. because there's been one Jonathan Ogden. There have been very few players like that. The question is who's no worse than Jeff Backus? They're like, well, who's Jeff Backus? Like, he was a first-round offensive tackle from the Michigan who was a starter for a decade. Well, like, okay, who's Jeff Backus? Who's Anthony Costanzo? Who's that guy? Like, I need the ceiling and I need the floor. And I think that's what you're really looking at when you're talking about offensive line.
Last one for you, Tim, quickly. You said when you're evaluating the quarterbacks, you also kind of by de facto evaluate the receivers as well. How do you rank these top three receivers? Neighbors, Odunze, Harrison.
Yeah, I think Harrison is the guy that I would want the most. Receiver is a big bust position. You know, we get it wrong a lot. And I just think that there's too many things about how he's been coached, you know, what he looks like running routes, how he plays the football, that I would feel confident that, like, he's not out of the league in 4 years. Like, that, like, and, you know, that isn't necessarily swinging for the fences, but, like, I feel most confident about that. I then would say that Neighbors – would be the next guy for me, because I just think that, like, when I see him get off of, like, one way guys are bad is if they can't get off the jam. Like, he to me is a guy that he's not going to have a problem developing really good releases. And then Odunze, and I certainly, like, having him ranked third, I mean, I don't think he's a good player. Like, I think he's a great player. I love his story. I love his attitude. I love how big and strong he is. But that's how I would rank those guys.
Tim, you are the best. Appreciate your time today. Thanks for being flexible with us this week, and we'll catch up with you next week. Have a great weekend.
Sounds good. See you guys.
All right, have a good one, Tim.
Appreciate it. Tim Hasselbeck, he is the absolute best. We'll react to what Tim had to say there. Plus, Final Four, both on the men's and women's side this upcoming weekend. I don't know what it is. It just feels like there's not as much juice, in my opinion, going into the Final Four than there was in the Elite Eight. I don't know what that is. Am I alone there? We'll discuss coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Hey, tune in to 102.5 and 106.3 The Game today as Vanderbilt Baseball takes on LSU with pregame at 6:45 p.m. and first pitch at 7 p.m. I'm bummed that Willie's not here because I didn't get to give him a hard time for my Tigers beating down his doors last night. Vanderbilt Baseball brought to you by Smoky Mountain Tops, your countertop experts. Visit SmokyMountainTops.com. The Final Four coming up this weekend. Women's Final Four tonight. We've got NC State and South Carolina, UConn, Iowa, little Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark action. We've got the Men's Final Four on Saturday. I'm going to be honest with you, D-Mace. I don't know what it is on the men's side. I don't know if it's like the Vols got bounced in the Elite Eight. I don't know what it is. I'm not feeling the juice for the Men's Final Four. Like, I was so excited. It was appointment watching for me every Elite Eight game. But now I'm just kind of like, eh. And I don't know why. Like, it's the final freaking four.
Well, because, I mean, listen, we only have two of the, you know, number one seeds that made it through. Obviously, Houston got beat earlier. Carolina got beat as well. They were another number one seed. So now you look at this, you know, fantastic story of DJ Burns and the North Carolina State team going up against this Purdue team led by Zach Edey.
The big men of all big men.
The big men of all big men. And then you got Alabama, who's a four seed, going up against that UConn team, which seems unbeatable.
Wagon.
You know, so I think people, they've only, UConn has only trailed in this year's tournament 5 minutes. They trailed only 5 minutes. That's absurd. Means they basically have been dominating everybody that they play, sort of like last year. They dominated everybody that they played last year. They got on a roll and they just, you know, they just took over in the tournament. And it seems like quietly they are doing the same thing. But you don't have sort of the marquee names that are attached with these teams, even though these are four really good teams. And we, you know, we were able to see Alabama firsthand being in the SEC. This is a damn good team. But, you know, are they going to be able to match UConn and what they're able to do, especially in the middle with their big center. And then Purdue and their center. Can Purdue finally get over the hump and make it to the championship game with who we believe is going to be the back-to-back player of the year, Zach Edey? But you just don't have the sexy names out there. But if you look at the women's side, I mean, you got just this star stud everywhere. Whether it be Cardoza, the big center from South Carolina, Paige Becker, Caitlin Clark. I mean, you have stardom everywhere across the board when you're talking about these four teams on the women's side.
And that might be what it is, that superstars and headlines and storylines that drives so much interest. And I think we've seen over the past couple of years that the women's game is incentivized because they stick around a little bit longer traditionally than the men will. There's a lot of one and dones on the men's side. When you are there for a year, you don't develop those rivalries like we've seen develop between Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese in Iowa and LSU. Whenever you're only there for 1 year, you don't really get to fall in love with the person and the personality and the character like everyone across America has been able to fall in love with Caitlin Clark. So I think that's part of it for me. But I mean, you still have the names and the storylines with DJ Burns against Zach Edey. Like, if there's anyone that could beat Zach Edey, there is anyone that could do to Zach Edey what Zach Edey has done to literally any other team in the country. Like, it's DJ Burns and NC State. I wholeheartedly believe that. And it might be like once it gets closer, when I wake up tomorrow morning and we've got two great games on, like, then I'm going to start feeling it. But I will say this, as far as Alabama is concerned, like, if you would have asked me, like to place odds on the Caroline Fenton Sportsbook, will Alabama make the Final Four? Yes, would be like plus 25 billion. You might want to sprinkle a little bit of money on that one. But I will say, I didn't care who it was. The SEC had eight teams represented in the NCAA tournament. I didn't care if it was Tennessee or Auburn or Alabama or Kentucky or Texas A&M. It was time for the SEC to be represented in the Final Four because they hadn't been there since 2019. In the SEC this past season, or really over the past couple of seasons, the SEC wanted to be respected as one of the top basketball conferences in America because, frankly, that's kind of what they were, at least in the regular season. And I think that the SEC had four, five, maybe even six teams that legitimately could have made a run. But you cannot be considered one of the best basketball conferences if you consistently are getting beaten way too early in the tournament and if you aren't represented in one of the Final Four. So, whether it was Alabama or Tennessee or Florida or whoever, I just thought it's about time that the SEC finds itself in the Final Four. And if it wasn't this year, when you had eight teams, when you had as many teams that were as dominant in the regular season as they were, like there were just no excuses left. You needed to be in the Final Four. Would I have guessed that it was Alabama? No, but good
I
for
don't think
Alabama. And I think that the SEC has to thank Alabama for being that team and being that representation from the conference, getting to the Final Four, because it's been too long. The SEC has been too good for too long to not be represented in Phoenix this season.
Well, they are represented, but not by the teams that we thought was going to be representing the SEC. We thought it
Yeah,
was
and
going to
credit to Nate
be
Oates for that.
Kentucky. Exactly. Yeah. Credit to Nate Oates. He's done a wonderful job, led by that guard C Sears. But we didn't expect, Alabama to be in this situation. We expected someone like a Tennessee or a Kentucky or an Auburn to be in this situation. Well, Alabama said, you know what? Damn y'all. We're gonna keep on playing and we're gonna keep on winning. But it's going to be an interesting matchup with UConn in this one. But they are, I mean, kudos to them. They are the team that is representing the SEC in the Final Four. I would have loved to see Tennessee in a Final Four, but to have some type of representation, because you're right. If they didn't have any representation whatsoever in the Final Four after the season that the SEC had in basketball, I think it would have looked bad on a conference, period.
You want to be the best, you got to beat the best.
Exactly. Absolutely. So, but we'll see some good games. We'll see some good games this weekend. I can't wait to see, you know, and I'm sure everybody's talking about that. They talked about it on ESPN earlier this morning. I was watching Caitlin Clark, Paige, you know, those two individuals going up. You got two of the best women's college players in the country. And what makes this not just intriguing but exciting, they would have to, they more than likely would guard each other. You know, if you looked at last week when you had Kinect versus Zach Edey, Kinect was never going to guard Zach Edey, and Zach Edey was never going to guard Kinect. But in this situation, or you go back to Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. Angel Reese was never going to guard Caitlin Clark. And if Caitlin Clark found herself guarding Angel Reese, she wasn't going to win. If Angel Reese found herself guarding Caitlin Clark, she wasn't going to win.
If Caitlin
Now
Clark
you
was
get two
guarding Angel
marquee players.
Reese, Lisa Bluter should have been fired. That girl doesn't
Exactly.
need to
I,
be guarding
absolutely.
anybody. Put the ball in her hands.
Absolutely. So now you get to see two marquee players guard one another. Now they won't be guarding one another throughout the game because you don't want them to get in foul trouble. But there will be several times down the court where you will see Paige go up against Caitlin.
What are you on the men's side? Like, what is your buy-in excitement level?
One I do want to see it's sort of this David and Goliath with North Carolina State and Purdue. You got, you know, Zach Edey at 7 foot 4 going up against DJ Burns at 6 foot 10. It looks like, have you ever seen the movie, what was it called, Big, with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Joe Pesci, not Joe Pesci, but I forgot the other actor. And when they were on the press release, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger is like 8 feet tall and the other guy's like 2 feet
Like
tall.
itty bitty.
That's how it's going. Exactly. That's how it's going to seem when you see DJ Burns try to guard Zach Edey, or, you know, Zach Edey trying to guard DJ Moore, because DJ Burns, because my thing is DJ Burns has the ability to pull him away from the basket. I don't think anybody else that has played Purdue thus far in the tournament had the ability to have their center pull Zach Edey from the middle. Will he go? I don't know. But if DJ Burns hits enough mid-range shots, that forces Zach Edey to move out the middle of the field, middle of the court, where he's been dominant on the defensive end as well as the offensive end. So I'm intrigued just to see that matchup. Again, you got the David in you know, North Carolina State, and then you got the Goliath in Purdue. So I'm eager to see that matchup.
And they both have their own Goliaths, respectively.
Yeah.
They have their own massive big men. And traditionally, when it comes to, like Cinderellas and the Cinderella stories in March, I love it in the first couple of rounds. But once we get to the Elite Eight, I'm like, no, like, give me the blue bloods, give me the best teams. This story was great and all. Like when St. Peter's found themselves in the Elite Eight, I was like, I'm tired of you now. Like, you were a great story last week and 2 weeks
You
ago.
can go.
Go away now, please. I want to see the big boys play. Why I feel differently about NC State is they have that character in DJ Burns. They have that player that I think all of America has fallen in love with and everyone has kind of gotten on board with. And I think that Zach Edey may have kind of become that villain. Like, how when we look on the women's side, the Angel Reese versus Caitlin Clark rivalry, Caitlin Clark is the hero and Angel Reese is viewed as the villain. Although it's kind of a storyline that frustrates me, it's a storyline that drives
Exactly.
eyeballs. That's the same kind of thing that I think all of America, Vols fans included, are sick and tired of Zach Edey. And DJ Burns is like this beacon of hope, like, oh, that has come out of nowhere. Now everyone is really championing for NC State. So I think that's a fun storyline as well.
Yeah, and I look at it from a standpoint. It's not just you know, sticking with the Purdue game versus North Carolina State. It's not just DJ Burns, it's DJ Holmes, who's shooting 40% for the 3-point line, who shot 40% for the three-point line during the season. He averages you know, close to, if not 17 points a game during the season. I don't know how much he's averaging. You know, he's still averaging double digits in the tournament. So it's not just a DJ Burns. It's like, okay, you got Zach Edey on one side, you got DJ Burns on the other. Who are going to be the other guys that sort of make a name for themselves in a Final Four, because that's what it's going to boil down to. I mean, DJ Burns has a name. We know he can play.
Yeah.
We know damn well Zach Edey can play. Who's going to be those other guys that contributes to whether Purdue wins or loses, or whether North Carolina State wins or loses?
Do you feel like this weekend is appointment watching for sports fans?
Appointment watching? I don't think I would have said this any other year outside of this year. But because of how the women's is playing, how the women's teams are playing in this tournament, the marquee names, and how they're not just marquee, they're balling. Like Paige is balling. Caitlin is balling. You know, that South Carolina team is balling. I wouldn't have said it was appointment watching this year. But because they are, it is appointment watching. And it's all because of the women's basketball. It's all because of the women's Final Four. It's not just the Final Four. If just think, when they play the finals, the championship game, that's going to be highly rated as well, because you're still going to have either Paige in it or Caitlin in it. So one of, now if Caitlin's in it, I think it's going to be the 12.3 that they got last week versus LSU viewership.
I hope it does.
Yeah, but because of the marquee names, I think I would, I think, I believe it's appointment watching this weekend, just because of the women's Final Four. If it was left up to the men's Final Four, it would be like, nah, I catch a replay. Just tell me the score and who scored what. But because of the women and the way they're playing, it is appointment watching basketball, especially tonight.
I'm with you. I think that the women's tournament is must watch. It is appointment watching.
Exactly.
I think Iowa LSU was. And I mean, like, obviously I'm going to watch it because that is my team and my alma mater. But I mean, 12 and a half million other people agreed with me, and not all of those people are Iowa or LSU alum. So yeah, I'm going to watch all the games, of course. I'm going to watch the women's games tonight, and I'm going to watch the men's games on Saturday. But the excitement level and the sense of urgency level for me to watch Alabama UConn, as great of a game as that's going to be, because there's probably going to be about 275 total points scored in that game. When we're actually sitting down watching it, we're going to love it. But the hype, the buildup, it just feels so much more intriguing on the women's side than it does on the men's. We're going to take it to the bank coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mays. And speaking of the Final Four, go to thegamenashville.com/bracket challenge and fill out your 4-team bracket to compete to win prizes, including tickets to see Creed at Ascend Amphitheater on August 13th. The 1025 The Game Bracket Challenge brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook, Twin Peaks, and Volunteer Hose and Gasket.
Here comes the money. And you can take that to the bank.
Here comes the money.
It is now time to take it to the bank with F&M Bank. Less worry, more living. F&M Bank, making lives better by making banking easier. So visit one of their 20 locations throughout Middle Tennessee and Southern Kentucky, or online at myfmbank.com. Before we take it to the bank this week, quickly, Nick, how did we do last week?
Yes, so last week Caroline picked Gonzaga to win over Purdue. That did not happen.
She did take
Tennessee to beat Creighton, and that did happen.
Creighton.
Yeah,
I think Creighton. The boys beat Creighton.
Yeah, Creighton.
Oh, cool. All right.
And then you had a Mookie Betts home run.
That did happen.
And that did happen
Several
as well.
Several of those happened.
So that was pretty good. You had a 7 on the weekend. As for Willie, he picked Marquette to -7.5 over NC State. That did not happen. He picked Tennessee to win. That happened. Gave him a 5. And then D-Mace picked Duke to win. That did happen. He picked South Carolina to win over Indiana by 20-plus points. They only won by 4. And then he had the Detroit Tigers to have 2 home runs on opening day. That did not happen. So D-Mace with a 3. As for myself, I picked Ronald Acuna Jr. to get a home run. Didn't happen. And then I went against the grain and said the Dodgers were going to sweep the Cardinals. That didn't happen either. So the current standings after the second week of Take It to the Bank: Willie at the top with 15, Caroline in second with 12, myself at 10 in the third spot, and D-Mace down at the bottom with 3. So D-Mace, let's turn it around this week, man. You got this.
Damn. I can't even points, be mad. That's all I got?
Yeah.
I can't even wow. be mad.
First right, week was a goose egg. So
Willie's been so down right. bad and take it to the bank.
Yeah. As right, with that, picking, go I'm ahead, D-Mace.
I'm picking the Nashville Predators Ooh. To win. Two or more, they will have two or more goals. I'm taking UConn to win by more than 10 points. 10 points or more. UConn's men, not UConn's women. And then I'm picking outright UConn's women to win and Paige Beckers to have over 15 points.
Ooh, okay.
I like it.
Go ahead, Caroline.
All right, I'm gonna say that the Cinderella story ends here. I'm going to take Purdue over NC State. I am going to say that Caitlin Clark has 30-plus points against UConn. And I'm going to say South Carolina not only beats NC State, but South Carolina has a perfect undefeated season and wins the national championship.
Whoa. Okay.
When is the national championship? Monday?
Sunday. And then the Tuesday? Men's is Monday.
Sunday? Oh, so it's Sunday. Okay. Huh.
Okay. All right. Well, as for Willie's pick, he sent him in before he left. UConn to win and cover the 11.5. Purdue to win and cover the 8.5. And he went with a Betts pick as usual. Pete Alonso, home run versus the Reds in the series over the weekend. So not just one game, but for this series. And as for myself, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm going to take... I don't know why, but Nolan Arenado to hit a home run. This guy's been in a slump. He's due for a
been
home
down
run.
Bad.
Over the weekend, it's going to happen. And, yeah, I'll take the Preds to win and score three or more goals. So that's it.
You are an optimistic Cardinals fan. Much more optimistic than myself, Nick. But I like it, and I hope that you are right. And that is going to do it for us today. We will be back Monday at 11 a.m. Jared's first mock draft at 3:30. Stillman & Company's up next.
Be love and love on your people. Have a great weekend and peace.